everybody. I'm Phyllis, and I'm an addict. And, I told Dwight that I needed to speak first because I wasn't feeling well, and I thought that I might pass out at some time during the meeting, so he understood. So, and I had to do an ego check. You know, I said, Dwight, because I was caught by surprise with this meeting. I had walked in, and the person who was supposed to do it said, I can't do it. I've been doing service for 16 hours. I can't do it. I'm burnt. And he said, can you do it? And I said, I can't. I'm too sick. He said, well, it sounds like, you know, it's a good thing for you to do. And I said, I was like, shit. I said, sorry. I said, I don't know. I said, you know, I can't keep my words together. I'm sweating. I'm having hot flashes. I'm dizzy. I'm breaking out in a rash. And I thought about it, and I said, okay, I'll do it, you know, so. So God is good, and I'm blessed to be here. And I said to Dwight, I said, okay. I said, is my nose clean? My teeth okay? How's my hair look? He said, it's okay. So I got that out of the way. And I had originally planned to go to I forget the name of it. A suffering addict still suffering, something like that. And the reason why I chose to go to that particular meeting was because I have been suffering. And it never even dawned on me to go to this meeting, which is illness and recovery. And as a direct result of this disease, and I'm going to say blessed because I'm clean. I was blessed with hepatitis C from using. And I probably have had it for about 15 years. And it took me a long time coming here to do something about it. And I remember that they kept telling me that your liver enzymes are okay, but you have stage one cirrhosis. And I would say, okay, I'll do it next year. Well, I can't be that sick because the treatment can make you very, very ill. And I said, I can't do it. I'm not ready. I can't do this. And then I had decided, okay, I'm going to do it, and I became pregnant. And I couldn't do it. So my son is 3.5, and my viral load has only increased throughout the years, even though my liver enzymes are okay. My viral load was not staying the same. It wasn't miraculously going down. It was going up. So I'm a single parent. I'm 35, and I have a very active 3.5-year-old. And I was like, okay, do I do it now? And I prayed about it. I know that I want to be there for my son. And every time I turned around, one of my friends was getting on interferon. Every time I turned around, somebody was waiting for a liver transplant. Every time I turned around, somebody passed from hepatitis. So, you know, God works, and it was my time. And I started December 7th, and it took almost 13 years in this program to make that decision. So it was December 7th, and they put me on the interferon treatment, and they told me to have somebody stay with me that first night. And it's an injection. Good God, it's an injection. I'm like, I haven't stuck a needle in me in over 13 years. And do you believe it? What do I have to do now? I have to stick myself. And I remember going to the doctor's office and they showed me how to do it. And you know what? I was scared. My hands were shaking. She told me to tap the bubbles out of the syringe. I started to cry. She said, "You okay? Are you okay?" I said, "I'm okay. I just can't believe I'm crying. I can't believe I'm crying over this. I have to stick myself." She said, "Well, it's only sub-Q." I thought, well, thank God for that. I ain't got a mainline interferon. So, I was shaken, and I was scared. And, again, God is good. Someone in this program stayed with me that first night. And I remember saying to this individual, I took my shot at about 6. And the experience was, when am I going to feel high? And I was watching the clock. And it was 7 o'clock. And I still didn't really feel anything. It was 8 o'clock and I started to scratch. I thought, oh my God, this is making me itch. It was 9 o'clock. And I thought, I think I'm feeling a little high off of this. I don't know. I don't know about this. It was 10 o'clock. I decided I was okay. I wasn't nodding. I'm okay. It was interferon. 10 o'clock, I looked at this person. I said, "I'm okay. You can go home." He said, no, I'm not going home." I said, "Really, I'm fine." 10:30, Lord. 7:47 hit. I have never, ever, ever felt that way. I had a fever of 104. I had the tremors. I couldn't breathe. I was coughing. I was crying. And he was just holding me. And he had said it was one of the scariest things that he had ever seen. And, you know, in the morning, it was almost like I came to. It's not like I woke up. I came to, and I felt like a freaking truck hit me. And I made it through that night with someone in this program who stayed with me and did nothing but just hold me as tight as they possibly could. Laid on top of me because my body was jumping up and down. I didn't know if I was going to be able to do this treatment. How am I going to do this? I have a job. I have a son. I have this much money. No family here. And people in the program kept telling me, "But you have us, and we will be there for you." And when I first got clean, and I was coming off of methadone, y'all were there for me through the same things, the shakes, the tremors, the nose running, the other end running, okay? And I was able to take that next shot, again, with someone there. And it wasn't as bad as the first one. And then I started to say, okay, I think I can do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do it. And then the third shot came around, and I didn't need that person to stay with me. I said a prayer, and I gave myself the injection, and I went to bed. And You know, I stopped counting. It's about 5 months later, but... And it's dealable. Some days are better than others. I get to work about 3 days a week. My son, God bless him, I'll say, Nick, don't jump on mommy, my head hurts. Mommy, why does your head hurt again? Nick, don't jump on mommy, my back hurts. Mommy, why you gotta put that heating pad on your man? You know, it's like, and I worry, you know, people say, oh, he's not gonna remember this. I don't know. But God blessed me with a beautiful child. And we manage, you know. So I'm able to go to work 3 days a week. I've been able to take care of my son and do the best I can to take care of myself. Some days I may call you up and cry, I can't do this. I'm psychotic. My hair's falling out. You know, and I have a ton of hair, but it's falling out, and I don't like it. And along with the side effects, to prevent a lot of those side effects, you have to be on medications. So I see how people go back out. Some people have gone back out while on this treatment. And man, you have to stay plugged in. You have to stay so close to God. God works through people. You people are in here. So when I thought I was going to kill myself, you know, I told somebody. Then I went to the shrink, you know, and told him, you know. And we managed to get this thing to where I function. This is the first Saturday that I've been out, like out and about doing things. Because usually I take my shot on Thursday and I'm in bed Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So when I was asked to speak, oh Lord, I was like, I can't, I'm too sick. You know, and it's like, well, you know, what can you share about your experience? And I feel somewhat experienced in this. So, you know, I get to one meeting a week. That's what my body allows me to do. I get to my spiritual connection on Sunday. That's what my body allows me to do. And if someone asks me for help, I do what my body allows me to do. And what I've learned from this is how to set boundaries, taking care of myself, asking for help. I do not like asking for help. I do it, but I'm on my knees when I do it. And I do know that I couldn't have begun this process without you, because I see people who can't stay on it because they're too sick. I see people who have been on it and they test negative after treatment. So I have hope. And hopefully I can be there to raise my son. And it's a blessing, you know. I'm here. I'm not going to say I should have been dead. If I should have been dead, I would have been dead. This is what was given to me. This is wreckage of my past. Who would have thought 13 years later I'd be cleaning it up like this? And I gotta be honest with you and tell you that when I got here, and throughout the years, I thought, you know, I really got off easy compared to a lot of people. And God, I hope I don't step on toes or But there's a price. And when it's your time, it's your time. And the only thing I could say is, as long as you stay clean, have a God, go to meetings, work the steps, be honest, you have a chance to get through that. As long as you don't use, you have a choice. And a friend of mine keeps telling me, you know, you're choosing to live. And I said, okay, I'm choosing to live. So people have come up to me, and single parents, you know, and they're like, you're really an inspiration. Maybe I can do this now, you know. And I want to look at them and go, oh, well, just make sure you're all prepared, you know, but there's no preparation. It's a decision. Takes a lot of prayer, a lot of support. And when you're ready, my higher power, let me know. This is time. And I go through times, you know, summer's coming. I should be tan by now. You know, I got to go to the tanning booth because I don't go to the pool because I'm too white and hairy. So I got to go to the tanning booth. I can't go to the tanning booth. You're not allowed. And I have these big spots all over my legs from the injections. And my ego's not going to allow this. Whew, I'm going to have some serious work to do. You know, talk about humility, ego. So I'll be learning a lot this summer. I can't work out, so I may appear to be thin, but I do feel fat and flabby. And there's a lot. There's a lot of stuff that goes along with it. And again, I just say, higher power, take this. This is yours. Just get me through this day. And I'll share this with you this past Thursday when I took the injection. I don't know what was going on differently than the usual, but sitting in my room, I was getting ready. I said a prayer, because I always say, God bless this medicine. This is going to save my life. And I didn't say it. And I'm getting ready to take the injection, and I'm tapping the damn air out, and that feeling came over me. And you would have thought I was shooting dope. And because of this program, I was just like, God, take this from me. You know, bless this medicine. You know, I do not want to get high. And I took that injection and I got up and I walked away. And I don't want to get high today. But it's so ironic that what I was using to kill myself with is now, you know, saving my life. And like the good addict I am, my hands don't shake anymore when I pick that up. And that's a scary thing. Because, you know, it comes back. It's like riding a bike. And but I think about the first night, and I don't ever want to feel that way again. And I think about the first few months when you feel like you're under the influence all the time, and it doesn't feel good. But you keep coming, you keep crying, you keep talking, you keep praying, and you don't use. You know, you don't use. Narcotics Anonymous has given me freedom from active addiction in that area of my life. And, you know, for a dope fiend, I'm a miracle. I am no longer in prison in my own self. and I have a choice. And you guys helped me with that choice. I couldn't be here without you, whether it's 10 years, one day, 6 months. If I stay open, I can hear something every day that'll save my life, even if it's the real simple things. One time I thought I couldn't do this anymore, and my friend said, even if you can't, it's still gonna be okay. And I was like, oh, that's right. It's still gonna be okay. And you know what? It's 3 months later and I'm still doing it. And I didn't pass out. Oh, so excited. And my nose didn't start bleeding, you know? And I hope I was able to touch somebody, because you all have touched me. And, you know, if hepatitis C is the worst thing that happened from my days out there, then thank you, God. And thank you, guys.
Our next speaker for this evening is the White S.
Hi, family. My name is Dwight. I'm Natty.
Dwight.
And thank you, Phyllis. And, I don't know. I wish somebody had just asked me when I walked in the door, because they asked me about a month ago to do this, right? And I kind of been up in my head since then, you know. And the deal is that sometimes I don't think I qualify for this topic, you know. Up until 4 months ago, my life was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, actually, it's pretty cool now, but I had a stroke, minor stroke. And they were talking about open heart surgery and some other things, you know, that kind of scared me, right? And then the mental illness kind of kicked in, right? You know, and I had been feeling this pain for 2 weeks, I guess, before I even went to the doctor. You know what I mean? And I kind of talk about this, you know, the least little thing go wrong with my car, I'll take it to the shop. You know? But I'll walk around for 2 or 3 weeks with the pain and tell myself it's going to go away. You know? And that's kind of what I did. Till this one day, the pain kind of like got beyond the norm, you know what I mean? So I went to the emergency room and they kept me for a week. And, I kind of like planned my funeral, you know what I mean? And all that kind of stuff. So the deal is I have a hole in my heart and they have to close it up, you know. They were talking about open heart surgery, and I was like, I don't know about that, you know. They say, oh, we do this all the time, you know. I said, yeah, you did this shit to me. You know what I mean? But, you know, they gave me some other options, and you know, I'm kind of like on a waiting list now for them to repair this hole, you know. And The mental thing is still in, and my friends were like sitting there talking about doing like this, talk about the mental illness, you know what I mean? Because, I can plan the outcome and I can just fix it up and everything negative comes up, you know what I mean? I remember being in the hospital and Phyllis was talking about needles and they started giving me needles and, you know, my body had started turning black and blue, and, you know, they ran all these kind of tests, and, you know, they said, well, Mr. Slade, we got to give you some Demerol. I said, but I'm a recovering addict. They said, well, you don't want this procedure without no narcotics. You know what I mean? So they did what they did. You know, a part of me was like, shit, a free high. You know, and you know, but the deal is, they gave me whatever they gave me, it knocked me out. And the next thing I knew, they just wheeled me back to my room, right? So I ain't, you know, if I got high, I don't know nothing about it. But, you know, like I said, the mental obsession, you know what I mean? I think for me, that'll take me out quicker than the physical thing that's going on, you know. And thank God for friends, and thank God for having a God of my understanding and having been here long enough to know that I don't have to use no matter what. You know what I mean? And when I went to the hospital, by myself because I wasn't going to tell nobody. You know, and I really thought that they were going to, like, keep me a couple of hours and then send me home. You know what I mean? And after they kept me, I'm like, oh, man, I'm really getting ready to die. You know. So I have been having this problem for quite some time, but nobody ever told me exactly what it was. You know what I mean? One time they told me it was indigestion. You know, it was acid reflux. You know what I mean? It was all kind of other stuff. And this last time, they really did a whole lot of tests. And I'm grateful, because I know that it could have been worse. You know what I mean? And kind of like I said, I really don't feel qualified to speak on this topic. But the deal is I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And that's all I can share. Right, even though I know some people that are dealing with stuff that, you know, is ongoing and all that kind of stuff, and I think I want to make mine minimal. You know what I mean? I came in the convention center and I walked up the steps, and I really haven't been able to catch my breath since then. You know what I mean? So it's really some shit going on, you know. They got me on these blood thinners, you know, that I really don't like, you know. And it's really not a whole lot of side effects, but I don't like it, you know what I mean. I sit down for 5 minutes, and I was fighting like hell not to fall asleep, right, sitting right here. You know what I mean? And as soon as I go to the, as soon as I eat, I got to go to the bathroom. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. You know, that is like changing my physical stuff. You know, a week before I went in the hospital, my sponsor and I went to a friend of ours' funeral that we went to school with, and he died from a stroke. You know what I mean? So I need to be grateful. You know what I mean? And sometimes I am, and sometimes I'm not. You know, sometimes I'm really angry, and I take it out on the people around me. I was in the 7-Eleven not too long ago, and here we go with the mental stuff again, right? I'm angry at me, and I'm mad because of what's going on, and I ain't accepting it. And I'm in the 7-Eleven, and this guy is giving the lady a hard time, you know, really giving her a hard time, calling a bunch of names. So I'm standing at the counter, I'm just looking at her, you know. I'm hoping he'll look at me. You know what I mean? I ain't say nothing, I just kept looking at her. So finally he looked at me and he said something to me. And the next thing out of my mouth was, bring your ass outside, I will fuck you up, you know. And then when that happened, they couldn't tell who the asshole was. You know what I'm saying? Because I was acting just like him. You know? I was like, bring your butt outside. And I went outside and I was walking up and down in front of 7-Eleven waiting for him. You know? Because I'm angry at me. Yeah. You know? I had to stop smoking and you know, that's a good thing. You know? And I'm like, well, when am I going to start feeling better? Because like I said, I walked up the steps, and I ain't caught my breath yet. And that was like 15 minutes ago. You know, and I'm still up here huffing and puffing. You know, So this thing that's going on really ain't no joke, you know. And the deal is, I need to take it seriously, you know. I'm pretty much following the directions that my doctors gave me, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But I guess this procedure that they're going to do, they don't seem to think it's a hurry for them to do it. You know what I mean? So they kind of got me waiting. You know, and in the meantime, I'm taking this medication, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. You know what I mean? So somebody told me I need to start stalking the doctors. So that's what I've been doing, you know. I've been calling them, you know, trying to get, you know, some kind of date set up to do this thing, you know. And the waiting thing, you know, it's like, damn, why don't they go ahead and, you know, now they kind of accepted that this is what's going on. And this is what we need to do about it. And now they won't do it. You know what I mean? So they just, like, they playing with me, you know. So I don't know, man. You know, it's an ongoing thing, you know. I take it out on people that are close to me. And you know, Janice and I were riding up here, and we were talking about my youngest son, or our youngest son, who lives with me, you know, and he's just getting all the blunt of all my anger, you know what I mean? And the deal is, he's just being who he is, you know. Now, I'm not saying that I should kind of like just lay back and let him do whatever he need to do, or whatever he want to do. I'm not saying that, but I guess I need to find some balance in this process. You know what I mean? And understand that he's just not going to do things the way I want him to do. You know, want him to do them. So I kind of feel like I'm babbling, you know. So I'm going to sit down and think and say thanks for letting me sit.
You still have some time left, and the topic is illness and recovery. Would someone like to share? Come on.
How's it going? My name's Dave, and I'm an addict. By the grace of God, I'm here today. We're all family, so I can cry, right? You got a problem, but we'll talk about it outside. I don't want to spread disease, you know, but I got to share, like, I guess, what will happen if you don't do what you're supposed to. I've been diagnosed with osteosarcoma. It's a bone cancer. I used to weigh 280 pounds, bodybuilder. And if I wasn't lifting, I'd be dead now, probably wasting away to nothing. And, like, that tough guy, he's got it, you know. He can handle it. I don't want nobody to help me. And let me tell you what it did. Well, the doctors, they basically said, you know, they'd done everything. What can we do to make you comfortable? They're writing prescriptions. And the addict in me likes it. And, you know, deep down inside, I wanted help. Because, like, the girlfriend I fell in love with and asked to marry me, she's a paramedic. And, but deep down inside, I'm scared to death to deal with this. And I went to a meeting on grieving this weekend, and I realized that I was grieving myself already. I had done written myself off, and my actions proved it. I said, F it. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped calling my friends. I stopped showing up. I started secluding myself. Got a real dark apartment with only two windows, this big. Started taking the meds. Haven't quite abused them yet, and I emphasize yet. And last weekend, couldn't sleep all Friday night because of the pain on my back. Or Thursday night, I can't remember, but later that night at 9 o'clock, my girlfriend took me to the hospital, and, shoot, man, I'm really kind of embarrassed. But you know, well, you know what, man, dude, after what I've been through, ain't no time for that. I'm going to tell you what happened. Because, like, I don't want to share it at home. Because, like, you know, contempt by familiarity. You know, people know something about me, they're going to judge me. But that's my stuff I need to deal with. What happened was, went to the hospital, and they gave me an injection of Dilaudid. And the addict in me said it didn't work. I'm still hurting. I loved it, man. I was nodding out. My girlfriend said, stop fighting it. Just fall asleep. I couldn't see the look in her eyes because I just wanted more. They gave me another shot. Loved it. Doc, it didn't work. Man, I snapped at about 6 o'clock in the morning. Left AMA, screaming at my girlfriend. Same freaking addict, man. I got 4 years clean. Same addict. Just all on. It was gone. I was going for it. But I wanted to die instead. Got home. Screamed at her to leave. Because I was done. When she left, I got my pistol and I freaked out, man. Put one in the air. I haven't told her this part yet. Only one person knows. I put it to my head. I don't know if y'all know guns, but a dry fire, it's like 1 in 500. Pull the trigger and pop. Nothing happens. So, fuck. Boom, it went off. Shot my cabinet. God don't scream at Christians. He whispers. Man, that was the loudest whisper, dude. I dropped the gun. Got in my car. Grabbed my cell phone. Drove to my mom's house. Dialed 911 and told them what I did. At that point, I was done fighting. Nobody else called 911 but me. My girlfriend kept calling my phone. She was up the street. When she saw the cops coming down the street, she knew. God, the message I heard that she left, she knew I was gone. I'm sorry. Well, like I said, God whispers to Christians. I had this warrant. The officer that knew me, he didn't want to put the charges on me, but his superiors forced him to. So I went to turn myself in last Wednesday. I give him my name, show up at 8. There ain't no warrant. God's whispering, man. I said, come on, man, take me. I'm here. Took all my strength in the world to turn myself in and face it. He said, well, we ain't got nothing, man. We can't do nothing for you. Hey, you know, the addict's like, well, shit, let's go. Oh, man. So I called later that night to the station with the number. They spelled my name wrong. Well, the cops don't know any different. That's what I'm thinking. I know. One letter left out of my last name. Man, Wednesday, pray for me, y'all, because I'm going in. And you know, the addict in me, I picked Wednesday because I figured it'd be slow, you know? It processed quick. But if you want what I had, do what I didn't do. Or, you know, do nothing like I did and you'll get that. Like, I didn't want my girlfriend involved. I didn't want to see the pain in her eyes. You know, my mom can't deal with it, so I'm just assuming everybody's going to deal with it like my mom. You know? She's addicted to Xanax and stuff, so she can't handle this stuff, you know? So I assume everybody's going to deal with it like that, so I shut everybody out. Man, what a mistake that made. Well, now I'm in for it, because, like, you know, I don't want to die like that. I don't want to die alone in that apartment. God whispers, man, but he's strong. I'm like, I used to be on fire. Like, I'm burning now, man. Past week, I've been doing nothing but crying. People say, you know, it's good to let it out. It's on, man. I'm a big baby crying. You know what? It feels good. I'm tired of suffering. It feels good to cry. I ain't felt nothing in years, man. Even when I got clean, I thought I would, was feeling feelings, but nah, man. 4 years in, and things are constantly being opened up to me. It's awesome, man. And he's been a gift, and it's made me arrive. You know, I can't think of anything else to say but how grateful I am, how lucky I am. You know, illness and recovery, the little pamphlet, it talked about all the feelings that we would go through about, like, anger, denial, frustration. You know, it didn't talk about grace and acceptance and patience that our families put up with. You know, yelling at them and screaming at them, God bless them for it. Because it showed me I was lovable. God's grace was shown to me through my family. Thanks.
I'm Optimist Julius, and I'm an addict. And I'm truly blessed with the gift of recovery. And reading Illness and Recovery, I desperately need to come and basically listen, but through God's grace, you know, God allowed me to live long enough to hear the message of recovery. And as a result of my addiction, I had acquired severe asthma. I became diabetic as a result of drinking and using drugs for so many years, and I've been a diabetic for 17 years, taking insulin twice a day. And a couple years ago, and I was an addict, I kept a job. Even during my addiction, I worked. But 2 years ago, I was no longer able to work anymore because I got sick and mismanaging my health, lifestyle, eating, and you know, anything, and I could no longer work. I could no longer pay rent. And through God's grace, I found my brother who I hadn't seen for but like close to 7 or 8 years and didn't know where he was, and he asked me to come live with him in Hagerstown, Maryland. And I moved up there, and I didn't know anybody, but I plugged in immediately. And the first meeting I went to, I was asked to lead and share at that first meeting I went to in Hagerstown. And I immediately got into service, and I've come to know a lot of people. And I'm basically, I'm an introvert. I'm basically a loner, but I've come close and have a lot of friends in recovery, especially I'm a native Washingtonian and very involved in service in Washington, D.C. And I got in service in Hagerstown. I got involved with the H&I. After about a month of being in Hagerstown, I used to always take my finger stick in the morning and see what my blood sugar is. But for some reason that morning, I didn't take my finger stick, and I ate breakfast, and I took my insulin. And that's all I remember. It was come to find out I lapsed into a diabetic coma, and they said I was out for at least 2 days in a coma. But I was laying in that house for at least 14 to 16 hours before my brother found me. And they rushed me to the hospital, and they found some opiates in my system. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I had severe arthritis in my back and my spine, and I have to take a narcotic to ease the pain. And in the basic text, they talk about, in More Be Revealed, they talk about being ill and recovery where you have to take narcotics. You know, because I'm an addict doesn't mean I have to live in pain. I've tried all the other drugs, you know, pain medications. Nothing worked. Except for that narcotic they had to give me, which is Percocet. You know, and sometimes because of the doses I have to take, that I do get a little drowsy. you know. And I also have to wear a pain patch on my back, which lasts for 3 days, which is also a narcotic. But it doesn't affect my being intoxicated or under the influence, you know. But I wear it for the pain. I just don't want to be miserable in recovery. But whenever I'm driving, I don't take it because I want to nod off on Route 81 or somewhere, you know. I go through a little pain, you know, and I deal with it. But when I get somewhere where I can relax, I take it. But after I spent a month in the hospital, and my brother was so afraid, he put me in a nursing home. 2 months. Then a young lady that my brother knows said, man, I'm going to take you to this 3-day seminar. It was somewhere near here in Eastern Maryland where it says it's called Reversing Diabetes and for people who have obese problems. As you can see, I am by no means obese, you know. But I had that hope. Like I told you, I introduced myself as optimistic, and that means having a hopeful view of the matter, that God does prevail over evil. I don't use it to sound impressive and, you know, to get a handle. I wear it because I have a hopeful view of the matter in spite of what happens. And I just have a hope that whatever I go through, God's... And when I heard Reversing Diabetes, I didn't know how, and I didn't know when, and a very little faith. But I just believe, and I can't say, God's going to help me through this. Because, see, when I was on methadone for over 7 years, they said, you can come off that meth. And I was going to meet, I said, I'm going to try it. I didn't know when. But after 18 months through silent detox, you know, I came off that meth. You know, I see a couple friends of mine was on that meth program. You know, it's been over 12 and a half years since I drank my last cup of soup they call methadone, you know. But through that process, what I had to go through to reversing diabetes, I had to stop eating meat, I had to stop eating and drinking dairy products such as milk, eggs, cheese, you know. I had to walk anywhere from 2 to 4 miles every day and drink a lot of water. And I went through that process. I didn't know when, but I didn't know if it was going to happen, but I believed on deep down in my heart, one day I'm going to put down my guns. I ain't going to have to use insulin no more. And I kept coming back, and I believed. I did everything they told me to do. Then, and within 3 months, the doctor said, well, we're going to try something. Your blood sugar, because many days went by when my blood sugar comes down to 70, you don't have to take insulin. And many days I didn't have to take insulin. He said, well, on that 3-month period, he said, well, we're going to test you for a week without taking insulin and see how you run. And that week went up, you know, and he said, well, we're going to take you off the insulin. But it didn't say my diabetes been reversed. But he said, we're just going to take you off the insulin and see how things happen, you know, and how you work out, you know, still taking my finger stick. I'm still in the nursing home. I'm still taking my walks. I'm still drinking water. And I still wasn't eating no meat. And I love chicken, fried chicken or baked chicken. Man, I love it. And I was basically eating like fish and chicken. But a couple more weeks went by. He came and said, I'm here to report your diabetes has been reversed. You no longer diabetic. The same principles that I use in 1, 2, and 3, as basically all the steps, especially 6 and 7, I use in getting in enhancing my character in Narcotics Anonymous, I use it in reversing my diabetes. I'm here to report, you know, I am no longer diabetic, but I had a relapse of an eating meat. You know, but my sponsor told me, you know, it's not a sign of relapse. It's just that, it's just the level of your recovery. You know, about once or twice during a week, I eat me some chicken. You know, I just don't go overboard. I don't be eating a lot of apple pies and a bunch of cakes, and you know, I just keep coming back, and it's going to get better, you know, and throughout this program, and I do the necessary things, you know. As a result of my addiction, I acquired this recovery, but I just don't have to, you know, in one day, I have a hopeful view of the matter. One day, I may no longer have to take that Percocet. Probably one day I just have that dream, and that, you know, and not just a mere wish that one day I won't have to wear this pain patches. But I'm just going to keep coming back and do the things I use, you know, and I'm going to get better. But the main thing, and I can't say that I did it, but my friends, especially the ones in D.C., they didn't let me die. They called me. They came up to the nursing home, and they came and allowed me and brought me out. And the people that I was close to, got close to in Hagerstown, they didn't let me die either. Now, I only knew them very shortly, but they came to the hospital. Because when I was in a coma, you lose a lot of your memory. And I forgot names and telephone numbers. I forgot my birthday, you know. But one thing I did remember, my clean date. On July the 9th, 1989, you know, I do remember that, you know, and they came to me and they wouldn't let me die, man, and we did this thing, in spite of the fact that I was the diabetic, but they didn't let me die. This program worked. Thank you for allowing me to share.
I would like to thank our speakers and everyone for sharing. With that, we have a nice way of closing.